Chapter 57. Piper. The Damage's resonance wards pulse in time with my pipes, filling the air with music. Mika rests her voice as she leads us through the vast undercity as assuredly as she did the hidden passages and shortcuts of Sharikora. Her scent is steady, focused, angry. Everyone smells of it. Mika and Selin at Olive, Rojva at Arik. Maybe something in me is broken, but I don't understand why. I only know how to be angry with myself. Olive was wood-brained to try to fight a mind demon alone. But given the choice of running off alone or taking my friends along with me into a likely slaughter, I wish I had the stones to do the same. It's what Dad did when he left us behind and touched the core. I could have left Selin that first night on the road. Night I should have. Without her slowing me, I could have caught the Maja before they got Olive anywhere near that boat. Maybe I couldn't have fought them, but reckon I could have snuck around and figured out a way to open whatever locks they had on Olive and Mika. With an hour's head start, even Dama Ting Dice couldn't have caught us before we got back to Hollow. Creator, even if they caught us, it's Olive and me the demons want. Selin and Rojva and Arik could be safe behind the wards right now if I'd had half as much sack as my dad. But I was scared and didn't want to go alone. And now we're all going to die. What's the point of being mad at Olive and Arik when I should be mad at myself? The feeling makes its way into my music, as they often do. There is no worthy prey here. My pipes tell any corling that might chance to hear them, gently guiding their attention elsewhere with my own feelings of inadequacy. It doesn't take long before I can sense the demon Greatwood. Its power is so great, it glows on the horizon like a coming dawn. Even the others can't miss it. How could this have grown unnoticed inside the city? Rojva asks. The Maja don't have enough warders to maintain the entire undercity, Mika says. Easier to close it off and use the holy undercity. It's more than big enough. Aye, Selin agrees. But that doesn't explain why the Sharum never noticed. Mika has no reply to that, but there is worry in her scent, and she increases the pace. Ain't much of a warder, but I've seen magic whirl in the symbols for as long as I can remember. Power will flow to its centre, and like a spider in a web, that's where the demon will sit. All of us have blessed horror weapons and shields, but Selin and I have cloaks of unsight as well. Rojva and Mika have no such protection. Da would have given his cloak to one of them. But the cloak and the knife are all I have left of, ma'am, and I ain't got the stones to give either of them up, especially here. Mika seems to come to the same conclusion as we enter the demon Greatwood, lifting her voice to harmonize with my pipes. Immediately, Rojva does the same, the three of us taking the song's power to new heights. Our trio has only played together a little, but already Mika and Rojva weave their voices like sisters with a lifetime of practice. Both are more skilled than I am, but they let me lead, probably because they don't think I could keep up. Our spell song transcends anything I could affect alone, creating a halo of sound to keep us invisible to callings while subtly nudging them out of our path like water flowing around a stone in a brook. The cloaks and music and blessed bone shields have a cumulative effect, but there are demons everywhere, enough to put everyone on edge. Wanderers patrol the tunnels openly, and regulars hide around corners and behind stalagmites or in crevices in the stone above our heads. Twice I sense hidden ambush pockets, warded like the ones Sharum use in the maze. Even I can't see or hear the sand demons clustered within, but I can smell them, taste them on the air. I suck in, knowing it will hide my own scent, but I could do nothing for the others. The demons smell us as well. I see the wanderers sniff the air, probing with their snouts as they vainly try to pinpoint the source. But smells are not enough to spur the demons into action. We pass without incident, continuing to wind deeper along the ward with every step. I add a sharp note to my piping, and everyone stops short. Across the tunnel in front of us are thick strands of clear, sticky silk. It is invisible in ward sight, and hidden from the natural spectrum here in the darkness. Mam loved to tell stories about Dad by the fire at night, and one of the most exciting was the time he walked right into a cave demon's web. But I don't need much light to see. The dim glow of the wards is more than enough for me to spot the heavy thread. Da had powers like I could only dream of, which is probably why it never occurred to him to just turn slippery. No need for a coward's trick when he could just light up his wards with power and burn the webs to ash. But in my slippery state, I pass through the sticky silk easily as a bead curtain, gently holding some of the strands aside for the others to slip through. Above, I can hear the cave demon shifting, but with nothing adhering to the thread, there are none of the sharp motions that would trigger an attack. No sooner are we past this latest defense than I pick up the scent I've been dreading since this began. Blood. A figure detaches itself from the shadow of a large stalagmite. The others tense. But I know who it is before he even moves. For the first time I've seen, perhaps the first time in his life, Arik is wrapped in his father's motley cloak, with the hood drawn up. I can see the magic dancing along its concealing wards, hiding him much as Mam's cloak does me. Arik is covered in sweat, ichor, and blood, but little of the latter seems to be his own. He's lost his Horus spear and shield, but has scavenged others, still sticky with the blood of the Maja warriors they once belonged to. Rojva rushes to her brother, embracing him without missing a note of her song. Her eyes are wet with tears. "What happened?" Selen asks, while the rest of us maintain the musical shield. "We were ambushed," Arik says. "They knew we were coming. Expected it. When the melee turned chaotic, men lost their helmets. And the mind took them."
"Took them?"
Selen asks. "What do you mean, took them?" Arik makes a spitting noise. "They became slaves to Alagai Kaar and turned on us. We were not prepared to defend against our own spear brothers. It was all the opening they needed."
"Night,"
Selen breathes. "We've all heard tales of mind demon possession, but it's one thing to hear an ale story and another to live one. I wonder if there's still time to run away."
"Where's Olive?"
Selen demands. Arik takes us down a narrowing path.
"We had no choice but to flee. And the Alagai herded us this way."
The tunnel opens up on one side to a great cavern. The way ahead is a narrow ledge, clinging to a high cliff face. Ahead, part of it has collapsed.
"That is where Olive fell,"
Arik says. Selen slaps a hand to her mouth at the words, and I miss the next few notes, fumbling to find harmony again.
"Olive can't be dead. Could we have come all this way? Only to lose her because I was gullible and let her go down here without us?"
All of us look over the edge, peering into the darkness below. It's a long way down. Even with ward sight, it drops farther than any of us can see.
"There was no way to go after her."
Arik's voice is cold, but I can smell his shame. Indeed, the slope is too steep for an armored warrior to climb without proper gear.
"I could do it, but I'd have to leave the others behind.
It would take time to do it safely, and Creator only knows what's waiting down there."
"What happened to the others?"
Selen asks. "Why were you alone?"
"Taken," Arik says. "Iravan was one of the demon slaves all along, perhaps before he led us down here in the first place. He turned on us, pulling helms from the strongest fighters and trapping us on this ledge. Before long, half the men had lost their helms, and the rest were driven over the edge. I..."
He swallows, breathing deep to steady himself. "I killed my spear brothers." Selim reaches out, squeezing his shoulder.
"That wasn't them, Arik. And your fault."
Arik nods,
but still there are tears in his eyes. When I was the only one who had not been taken, I hid in Father's cloak, and the demon looking through their eyes could not see me. He points farther down the tunnel. After they gave up the search for me, Iravan marched the others below. Rosva stopped singing at that.
Ever do you speak ill of our father, but here on the road to Ni's abyss, his spirit protects you where your grandfather's strength of arms could not.
I hear it before I see it. A slight breeze blows through the cavern, hitting Auric's face and exhaling through a tear in his hood. I walk around him, as if to peer again over the edge, but glance at the back of his hood as I do. The large embroidered mind ward is torn. Rojva has resumed her song, but now I stop playing, tucking my pipes away in my satchel. Rojva and Mika turn to me in surprise as I drop out of our trio.
Hiding doesn't sound like you.
Even I am not fool enough to fight an entire hive alone, Auric says. The words make perfect sense, but there is something wrong about them. I remember the night Auric fought in the desert, the berserk rage that consumed him, blinding him to all sense of self-preservation in his drive to kill. Red curls have fallen onto his brow, though I watched him carefully tuck and bind them with turban cloth, so there would be no chance of them coming loose while he masqueraded as a full-blood Dal Shaarum. Looking closer, I can see from the shape of his hood that his helm is missing from beneath the black wrappings. My eyes flick back to Auric's scavenged spear and shield. Without hood, or helm, or hero's bone.
What really happened to Olive?
I demand. Something changes in Auric's eyes.
You'll see her soon enough.
Auric lunges from my head, attempting to knock my hood and helm askew. Fast as he is, I am faster, and expecting the attack, I turn slippery, quick-stepping to the side. His grasping hand misses, so he attempts to tackle me instead. In my slippery state, the second attack is as simple to avoid as the first, but then Auric whips the spear off his back and into my path as I slide out of the way. I step back to avoid it, and my feet meet open air. I try to grab the shaft of his spear, but my hands are still slippery. I solidify, and Auric uses the grip to pull me close and grab my helmet before push-kicking me off the ledge.
Darren!
Selin screams, dropping her spear to reach out her hand to me. Auric moves to take advantage of her distraction, but I don't see what happens next as I slam against hard stone and tumble end over end, picking up speed as I bounce down the slope.